Welcome to the Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and today we're going to talk about birds here at the beginning of the program. And I have with me Brian Dixon, who is a compiler for the Logan Christmas Bird Count. He's a member of the Bridgeland Audubon Bird Society and a retired environmental consultant. Brian, thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
I've seen bird count information every year in the paper, and I think I need to do this. I really should do this, and then, of course, I don't get around to doing it. So I'm being kind of selfish here. One of the reasons I wanted you to come in is so I could learn more about it and get me all pumped up about it. But I think you could help others get into doing the count as well. And so let's talk about the date. The date is the 19th.
Saturday the 19th mm-hmm. of December.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So talk about the generalities of the bird count. What will people be doing, and how can a novice be of any help?
Well, we first started doing the Christmas bird count here in the Logan area in 1955, I think. And we've missed 4 years in there, but pretty much we do it every year. There's a window that you can do it in from December 14th to January 5th. You pick one 24-hour period anywhere in there, and we always pick the first Saturday in that window. So the Christmas bird count is, the idea is to count every bird within the same circle every year. So the circle is centered in Hyde Park.
Yeah, I got to back up. I did read on your website it's centered on the Coke machine at
the
Maverick.
The Diet Coke machine.
Right. Oh, the Diet Coke.
The Diet Coke. In honor of the previous compiler, Dr. Keith Archibald.
Oh, okay.
Who was a fan, I guess we should say, of Diet Coke. So I say that's where it's centered in. Because we try to make it fun, even though the Christmas bird count is an invaluable citizen science project. The big reason for most of us doing it locally is just to make it fun.
So how big is the radius?
The radius is 7.5 miles, so a 15-mile diameter centered on that. So it takes us up into the mountains, and it takes us north into the meadows and the farm fields and out west into the Cutler Reservoir and Cutler Marsh. It includes the Logan sewage lagoons. So it was intentionally chosen to represent a broad variety of habitats. And of course, the more habitats you get, the more species you get.
And why in the winter instead of spring when you're going to have more species?
Well, there are other counts that are done in the spring.
Okay.
This count has an interesting history, and we can talk about that for just a minute. And it really came out, the first Christmas bird count was done in 1900 in New England. And it evolved from people beginning to understand the impacts that we were having on nature in the late 1800s. In particular, there was a fashion to put feathers, bird feathers, and actually dead birds on women's hats, as bizarre as that might sound.
I remember reading about the numbers of egrets had plummeted.
Had plummeted. And some people began to recognize that our activities, humans' activities, were having a profound impact on nature. And they were afraid of what we might do.
So this is 115 humans. Years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's a, not to get too political, but there's a real message here, which is we shouldn't be condemning those people in the past who have had impacts on nature. We need to look forward. And in this case, that's what they did. There was a custom at the time where you'd have Christmas dinner, and then in the afternoon, you'd take your friends out and you'd go shoot birds, and you'd work in teams. And the team that came back with the most dead birds won.
Any birds?
Any birds. Hmm. You know, so we would think of that as pretty perverse these days. You know, attitudes and knowledge change. And so what Frank Chapman did, he'd started a magazine called Bird Lore in the 1890s to try to raise awareness for this. He started something, an alternative to that practice. That practice was referred to as the Christmas side hunt. And so he thought that we should be, instead of shooting the birds, we should be counting them. And so the first Christmas bird count was done in 1900, and there were 20-some, you know, parties that went out looking for birds and counting them. And it's evolved ever since. It's spread across the continent, really.
And Utah, it was in Provo, you told me?
The first count in Utah was in 1904 in Provo.
It's just not the first place I'd think of in Utah for the count to start, but
they're enlightened people everywhere.
Yeah.
And so here in Logan, there are four or five folks. I don't have their names on the top of my heads, but they're documented in American Birds, and the old copies of the magazine are down in Merrill Library. I had a librarian take me down there, and we looked at them, you know, one time. Because all this is documented, not just the number of birds, but the number of species and the number in each species and how many people were helping out and who they were, what their names were. And so you can kind of track that from the early 50s or mid-50s when it started.
Trends? What are you seeing in trends in the last, I mean, that's more than 100 years here in Utah. Cache County, you said it started when?
Ours started in 1955.
Okay. So we've got a few decades of history.
We do.
Is it far enough back to determine how much global warming might be affecting?
Not things from our count. Because whenever you look at scientific data, you have to look at it in context. And in this case, the number of birds you find and the number of species that you find is heavily dependent on the number of observers that you have and their skill and also the weather conditions. So if it's snowy and foggy, as it sometimes is in the morning, you might not see very much at all until noon or 1 o'clock.
But you don't postpone it. You still go out.
Still do it. But what you do is you record the weather conditions and you record the number of observers and you record the amount of time that they spend observing and how many miles they walk and how many miles they drive, you know, how many miles they snowshoe or ski or what kind of conveyances they use. And you record all that data as part of the compilation data. So that when you look at this, you're looking at it in context. So here in Logan, it's really hard to say what are the trends in species, even in the region, without looking at all of the other Christmas bird counts that are done in this region, and then comparing that with national data, and then adjusting that for weather conditions and level of effort.
So overall, what are some of the important keys, that the important information that you get from the count?
For the entire CBC, that's a very important question, and the answer is complex. But the National Audubon Society has started mining this data for themselves to look at climate change, for example, and to look at where the centers of abundance, as it's termed, for various species that are here in the winter, in North America for the winter. And they found a profound shift northward, by tens of miles, and also away from the coasts for those bird species that don't rely on coastal habitats. And that's just, you know, answering the question about climate. But a few years ago, you might recall there was concern about West Nile virus and its impacts on birds. And the corvids, the crows, the jays, the ravens, those species were most affected by West Nile virus. And you can see a dramatic dip in the numbers of those birds that were found in the course of several years. But it's recovered, you know, as those birds that were particularly susceptible died and it didn't pass along their genes, perhaps, or as West Nile virus disappeared or was overrun by other prozoan species or whatever, then those species recovered. And you can see that in the Christmas bird count data.
I'd imagine that the efficiency of the count is done really well because you do it in the same spot each year and you have a lot of the same people. And so you can divvy up the areas and tell people where to go and,
right.
and as they're walking along.
It's the same 15-mile diameter circle. And we break it up into sectors. So there are 10 geographic sectors. And plus there's a group of people that are monitoring feeders. So you can participate even in the comfort of your home by watching your feeders, and there's a protocol for doing that. And so that the sector is monitored every year, and the same, and so that sector is assigned a leader, and then that leader is assigned people to help them. And so leaders tend to stick with the sector for several years, and so they get pretty good at it. They talk to landowners and get permission to walk on their land and observe birds, and I think I've only had one refusal from a landowner for us to count birds on his ground. And the next year he said, oh, sure, go ahead. So people get familiar with territories, they get familiar with birds, and they get familiar with each other. And so it gets to be something that's really fun. That said, people ask me, well, I'm just a beginner. I don't know very much about birds. You know, can I really help out? And the answer to that is absolutely. One of the neat things about the Christmas bird count is that even beginners can be very, very valuable. We need eyeballs. When you're out there with a team of two or three people, as an individual, you can't see every bird. And remember, the objective is to count every bird if you can. And so just someone finding a bird, just seeing it over on the left, where maybe the person who's most skilled didn't see it, you know, so there's a hawk, what is it? And then that person can turn around and identify it perhaps. So beginners are play a really important role in the Christmas bird count.
Is this fun?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Once you get up.
What time does it start?
Well, some folks will look for owls before dawn. And I'm always dragging myself out of bed at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, you know. I mean, it's warm in there and it's cold outside. But there's magic in the early morning. And so once you actually get outside, it's fun even in the dark looking for owls.
And is this a 24-hour count?
The protocol allows you 24 hours. And so most of our team start... those that are owling are starting around 4 or 5, and then we finish up usually around 5 o'clock or so in the afternoon. And it's dark again, and you're pretty bushed. So, for all intents and purposes, it's usually about 12 hours. That said, there have been some instances when at 11 o'clock, certain individuals were rolling out trying to find the 100th species, and there's some interesting stories there. So it allows you 24 hours.
So what are some of the interesting experiences you've had in the last 20 years? Just to give our audience some kind of an idea of maybe what to expect.
The compiler before me, Keith Archibald, a dentist in town, was a phenomenal birder and just addicted to this stuff. And he's really the one that got me introduced in this. So a lot of the stories relate to him too. But there are things like trying to find as many species as possible. So we'll, quote unquote, stake out a bird, you know, and in the weeks leading up to it, we'll look for birds. So we'll try to find a hermit thrush. Is there a hermit thrush around, or a winter wren, now called a Pacific wren? And so we'll try to find those birds and then go look for them on that day. And if you can't find them, well, you spend an awful lot of time looking around for them. So there's the individual birds that are really interesting, but then there are the larger flocks too. When we get rosy finches, and we don't usually get rosy finches in on our count, there are more high elevation bird, you know, 10, 11,000 feet, typically in the summertime. But when we get them, we get 3,000 or 4,000.
Wow.
So we never get one rosy finch.
So it's an eruptive species?
It's an eruptive species, right, exactly. I mean, the word is, if you want to find rosy finches in the summertime, go to the Uintahs, you know, go to Mirror Lake Highway, you know, and go high. And that's where you look for them. They're there. Right? That's where they'll breed in those high elevations. But around here, it's really not high enough, you know, even in our mountains that are 9,000 and 10,000 feet. So, but in the wintertime, they come down and they're looking for food and they're flocking up. And so when you see them, as I say, you see 3,000 or 4,000. Starlings are another fun species.
I was looking at the list of the total count from each year for the last 20 years, and two numbers jumped out at me, and one of them was like
66,000 starlings.
Well, 66,000. That just blew me away. I just like, well, why is this year there's a total of 85,000 species, and then the years before and after it was like 18 and 26, and you pointed out that starlings was one of those.
In the wintertime, starlings group up. They're referred to as a murmuration of starlings. It'll be this big morphing cloud of birds, and it's just magical to watch them fly. Some people consider them a real nuisance, but you know, they're here on this earth like a lot of other creatures, and so we try to enjoy their beauty. But when they occur, they usually occur in large numbers, and particularly in the wintertime, they're in large flocks, not individually. So that's another bird that we see a lot of, and it's kind of fun.
Well, and how do you count a murmuration of that many birds?
Well, the best thing about it is no one can check you, see, because the birds are all gone, so there's no one actually to contradict what you're going to. Actually, when you're counting large numbers of birds, you count them in groups. And so you'll say, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 10. And so you can imagine you can see those 10 birds, and you say, oh, well, then what's 10 tens? And you can kind of carve out, you know, 100 birds that way. And then 10 100s. So you can imagine 10 of something, you know, visually. And so you just scale it up. And the people who are really good at that, you know, counting shorebirds on the coast, for example, they may count hundreds of thousands of birds, and they can be within 2 or 3%.
Wow. Well, and you had said before the program that you were counting in groups of 5,000 with this particular group last year.
On that particular flock. Yeah, that 65,000 bird flock.
That blows my mind.
That was pretty bizarre. But we'll get a lot of ducks. We'll get thousands of various species of ducks, gadwalls, for example, out on the Logan sewage lagoons, where they feel sort of protected.
So there are different species that come through here in the winter or spend time here in the winter that you wouldn't see during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
So another reason to come out, because you're going to see things that you don't normally see.
And a good example of that we get every year is a rough-legged hawk. So the rough-legged hawks come down from Canada and the Northern Territories, and they're not here in the summer. You're not going to see a rough-legged hawk here in the summer, but you'll see them in the winter. Just as birds move out, a Swainson's hawk moves out in the winter. The rough leg sort of moves in to replace it. And they're both bootios. They have similar kinds of hunting and hunting activity. So
what time commitment should you give to the count? If you want to join into the count and be a part of it, can you do it for a couple of hours? Or would you rather have someone be in the same group and everyone stay together for the 12 hours?
We can usually accommodate whatever time someone has. There are people that can only join it for the morning or the afternoon, or, you know, a couple hours. And if they work with a sector leader, the sector leader, I mean, we have cell phones these days, which makes it so much easier. They can meet up with the sector leader. So before the count, each person who's on the count will be assigned to a sector, and they'll have the telephone number of the sector leader. So any amount of time during the day. But then don't forget the evening. One of the most fun things about the Christmas bird count is the compilation. So at 6 o'clock, we all convene at a central place, and we have a potluck supper. And we line up each of the sector leaders, and we go through the entire count, compiling all the data. So that evening, we'll know how many birds, how many species. And there'll be just some fun stories that come out of that of someone. Because we always go through the birds that are most common. And then at the end, we say, okay, did anyone see anything that we haven't talked about? And that's when the really fun stories come out. And you can see people chomping at the bit to tell everybody else something that they just found.
So, they just can't wait to tell you what
right,
they saw.
Right.
Well, I know for me, when I took my son out doing some birding for his birding merit badge, and we were talking about different types of birds, I wanted to show him something different. So he's seen... Canada goose. He's seen a lot at starlings. He knows what a robin looks like. I wanted to show him something a little bit different. So I'm like, okay, let's go to First Dam, because I know there's going to be something there that I've usually seen every time I go by there. And mm-hmm. So, of course, we were able to see golden eyes.
Right. Both barrows, golden eyes.
Both the common and the barrows. Mm-hmm. And he get the binoculars out. And the fun part for me was getting out my Sibley field guide and showing him the differences between the two, and then having him get the binoculars and look at the birds and be able to identify the difference between the two.
Right.
So.
Yeah, First Dam is a wonderful place to go for ducks. And I might mention that right now, just recently, and this often happens in December, there will be one or a couple of hooded mergansers there.
And do they stick around all winter, or are they just flying in for a little bit?
Sometimes they're here for very much the winter, for most of the winter. But they're only here really in the winter. We rarely see them in the spring or summertime.
What's the minimum age that you recommend?
For an observer?
For an observer for the count.
We've taken, you know, kids 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, you know. It depends
on their
interest.
Just make sure there's a parent with them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best thing.
Anybody who's young like that, we'd want the parent to be there.
Okay. How do you sign up?
You contact me. Yeah, there's a compiler for every count circle, and I happen to be the compiler for this count circle at the moment. So I can give you two contact information bits. One is an email address, and that is bdixon@xmission.com. That's just bdixon@xmission.com. Or you can call me on the telephone, and the number is 760-0691.
And I will also have a link to the Bridgeland Audubon Society webpage that's on our the UPR webpage. Mm-hmm. Just go to Zesty Garden, and that information will be will be
the
there
Christmas
as well.
Bird count is announced there, as well as my contact information, so you get to me that way.
So just go to upr.org, click on the programs tab, and drop down to Zesty Garden, and you'll be able to find the information there. Anything else that we should talk about as far as the bird count? There are other bird counts that are done. In Utah, there are...
There's 24 counts that are 24 count circles done in Utah.
Oh, and just for Christmas.
Just for Christmas
count. Wow, right. That's a number of counts. I would imagine there's probably one at the different wildlife refuges. So if you like go down to Ore,
right, and there's one in Ogden. I mean, they're all over the state. And if you go on National Audubon Society's website, you can look at the Christmas bird count and find a count near you. So if you're listening here and you're not in the Logan area and Cache Valley area and you want a count. For the CBC, you can find a count circle near you. Or if you're vacationing, if you're for the holidays traveling to Virginia, you know, or wherever, and you want to participate, you can find a count in those places. So it's really fun to have people from other areas of the world join us because they're sensitive to species that we may not be sensitive to.
Are the counts usually all on the same day or... No, within a couple weeks of each other.
It can be any day but in that window of December 14th to January 5th.
Okay.
So it really varies. So there are people that do 2, 3, 4 counts, you know, different counts.
And so in Utah, they're kind of spread around as well during that time?
Yep, they are. I think the Bear Lake counts that Dennis Austin does are typically after Christmas Day. So there's a little bit later count, you know, even nearby.
How many do you participate in?
Usually no more than 2. I usually, by the time I do this one, I'm pretty full. But I've also done the Bear Lake count.
Mm-hmm. What is one species that was just name a species that was totally unexpected one year, and then made everybody go, "Are you sure? Are you mean? How do you know for sure someone has actually identified a species like that?"
There've been a couple bush tits. It's a very, very small bird. My wife and I found those one time out in Benson, in that wooded area right there near the Benson Church. And people didn't really believe it until other people went out. One time we also got a Sora. So Keith Archibald and I were actually out there and west of 10th West and some of those marshlands. And we'd sort of taken a break and we were headed back to the car. And Keith says, "Wait a minute. I called that a Virginia rail, but it had a yellow bill." So that Virginia rails don't have yellow bills. So we went back and we were able to locate it, and it was a Sora, also a rail, but a different species. I don't think we'd ever seen one on the count before.
Hmm. And I can say from experience, I mean, I've not been on the count itself, but going out with someone who's knowledgeable, my first redneck grebe was with Ivan Palmblad. Those of you that took class from Ivan here at USU, it was Discovering Nature. We were out in the Benson area, and like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you get hooked. It's just a lot of fun identifying the birds and then trying to see how many there are and what different ones that you can come up with that someone else maybe has not seen.
The fun thing about birds is that they are everywhere. So birding has become less of something that I do just to go birding, and more of something that's just incorporated into all the time when I'm out of doors. And even when I'm watching a movie or something, you know, I'll hear a bird or see a bird on the movie, and I'll say, "That's a," you know, whatever it is. Or riding down the road and on my motorcycle, even one of my life birds was from a motorcycle when Gene said, that's a magpie, but they don't have black-billed magpies here. It happened to be in California. That must be a yellow-billed magpie. So we turned around, and sure enough, that was
it was
life bird for us. So they become a part of everything that you do when you're out of doors.
And you really get to know an area well if you're, to me, when you're out birding, I think of all the places where I've seen the birds, and I can almost in my mind tell you not only where I first saw the bird, but something about the area.
Sure.
So for instance, I was in Vernal for a couple of weeks with the StoryCorps booth, and I went to the Ore Wildlife Refuge. My first blue grosbeak will be because
cool.
of going down there and just spending some time and enjoying the surroundings.
And when I see a bird for the first time, I record the date, of course, but I also record where I saw it and who I was with. So when I go back into my field guide where I make these notes, I can remember that day and where I was. And
I should start doing that. I haven't been putting down who I was with. I've got all the other identifying information, but
it adds a lot.
Well, this is a wonderful conversation about that, and I hope that that you as a listener will consider joining the Christmas bird count wherever you happen to be. There are a number of them throughout the state of Utah, and I have with me in studio Brian Dixon. He's compiler for the Logan Christmas Bird Count, a member of Bridgeland Audubon Bird Society, and a retired Environmental Society consultant. And thank you very much for coming in, Brian.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. Hope to see you all on the Christmas Bird Count.